Hi, and welcome to the Making the Media podcast. My name's Craig Wilson. Thanks a lot for joining us. Our guest this week is Hejar Berenji, who is the CTO of the Rudaw Media Network based in Erbil in the Kurdistan region of Iraq. Hejar is from Iran, but after fleeing as a refugee to Turkey in his youth, he moved to Canada before establishing a career in technology and working for Apple before being appointed to Rudaw. Rudaw began as a newspaper in the Kurdistan region, which incorporates parts of Iran, Iraq, Turkey and Syria, before the idea was formulated to create a TV channel, radio station and multi-language digital platforms. But they faced huge obstacles to get on air, and then shortly after beginning transmission, the region was plunged into the centre of the war with ISIS. We'll come on to discuss their work in the region, his thoughts on the reality of the cloud and using AI, and how they have overcome many challenges to continue to broadcast and gather news in very tough circumstances. But let's begin with Hejar explaining the origins of the TV channel itself.
In 2011, the idea came up of why don't we take Rudaw into a local TV station that could have maybe a few hours per day or week of shows over there focusing on the developments of the week or the day and everything. But quickly, before even that local TV launches, the idea came up because there was a boom at that time in the region in terms of news channels and everything, and everyone suddenly realized the power of media. So the request was to know, let's go full scale. Let's go with a large news channel over there. And that's exactly when I was called back to help out with the project, and I got involved in 2012. So at that time, the group that was funding Rudaw over there, it was a small group of five or six people, if I'm not mistaken. At that time, we really wanted to have our objective to become reality there. So we had this idea of cross-media to build multi-platform media organization that could actually feed the people in any way possible. So we had the newspaper already. We had few other magazine and publications, monthly and seasonal. And then the idea was to go radio, expand the digital presence and have the TV channel launched and all work together as a cross-media platform that they feed from the same intake and go to different mediums. As you know, it's a very usual concept in the modern media as well. But at that time, for there, it was a huge challenge. It was something, it wasn't as easy as you could think of in London or Washington or like Belgium or Scandinavia. So already there was a lot of challenges because Rudaw newspaper was already making some people upset. And when they knew that there's going to be a TV coming up, it was like, oh my God, now we have to deal with Rudaw TV and Rudaw radio and all in digital. But what happened is, thankfully, we were able to overcome a lot of challenges and obstacles, technical, logistical, anything you could think of to establish a TV network or like a media network. The challenges were times 10 for us at the time of establishment. Finally, on May 29th, 2013, Rudaw Media Network was actually launched, which is owned by Rudaw Media Company in Erbil, the capital of Kurdistan region. But what made Rudaw really Rudaw, which could be a topic for a different question or podcast or whatever, is why Rudaw suddenly became so big. It was that when we launched in 2013, we never knew that we are going to cover the largest war of the century a year after we launched. And it was in August 2014 when ISIS entered Mosul, which was about 45 kilometers from our headquarters. And then they suddenly became the most powerful and the most rich terrorist organization in the world. And then the whole world suddenly came online. As they say on the content side of things, is that they say Gulf War made Al Jazeera. We say ISIS war made Rudaw, and that's how Rudaw was becoming that little tiny R logo that I guess a lot of people in the world at some point they saw it on their main news channels, because we started feeding all the major news agencies and major news channels in the world with our content.
What is it about Rudaw that you think makes it distinct from other channels?
We actually, in the beginning, as I said, the ambition, content-wise, we believe that the content and the technology, they need to cover and support each other. If the content and the technology were made for each other, and they served each other well, reaching the objectives would become a bit more possible. And in terms of the ambition, we all had this ambition that we really wanted to be that channel that could fill that space there, a space that no one was touching it in that region. Now, there is a difference. We are broadcasting in Kurdish. Yes, we do have digital presence in Arabic, in English, in Turkish, in Kurdish. But our main TV station was in Kurdish. And then I remember in the very beginning when we started it, the training for the journalist, there was one question that was asked a lot during the training. Who is important to you, to the journalist? Who is important? Is that the government? Is that the political parties? Is that the investor? Is that the general manager? Is that HR? Is that the other friend, the head of the department? Or is that the people? And the clear answer was people. People are the most important part of that news organization. Whatever is important to people, this is what's important to Rudaw. Our focus was to open up a window from that region to the world that we could actually, because from 19th century, when the world media was established, like Associated Press and everything, it was just the foreign journalists that somehow, if they had time or if they were there, they would cover stories from that region for the world. So we said, okay, let's open up a window that we tell the story of this region and that people to the world, and will bring the stories of the world in the language of these people. So the Kurdish audience, for the first time after launch of Rudaw, was able to listen to the President of United States, to the Prime Minister of UK, to the head of European Union, to the head of Gulf regions, in Kurdish actually. They would listen to them in Kurdish. And why it was so important? Because their speeches, their decisions, their politics, their strategies were affecting the daily life of people in that region.
Is it also important, you talked earlier on about the digital presence that you have, which is available in multiple languages, as you mentioned. But is it also the case that your audience is primarily young? And as a consequence, that has an implication for the kind of stories and coverage that you make.
I think the digital presence was an important decision to make in the beginning, and it was important that we had those different language services there. We wished that we could have more language service, but there was other obstacles. So we stayed with the services that we have right now. So English, Turkish, Arabic, and Kurdish. Yes, the audience is fairly young, and they are eager to have access to information. It's still very, compared to some other parts of the world, they're very much interested in politics and international relations and a lot of things. On the other hand, great, Kurdish people are interesting people. They're very different than the others in the Middle East. They are very open to new things. They're like very eager to know new things and use technology. And I think parts of it comes back from the reason for it is because they have been suppressed and pressured for a long, long time. And they have been limited by a lot of factors for centuries that suddenly when things open up, they react to it very quickly. And there is a very important aspect there. The launch of Rudaw Media Network was at the same time that internet was booming in the Kurdistan region, thanks to Newroz Telecom Company, which was the pioneer at that time. And it was the first time that I pushed them to give me an LTE network that I could take it outside and have live video over IP at that time to be able to cover news live for people, because live news is an essential part of news. So the launch of Rudaw Digital, the expansion of internet in the region, having access to high-speed internet in the region, free and uncensored internet for people, that created an environment that Rudow Digital exploded, and combining it with the editorial decisions that Rudow was making, as I said, the technical side and the editorial side, that's how it made a huge impact. And as of now, we are the, proudly, I could say, it's unbelievable at some point, we are the strongest digital media and social media presence in terms of news agencies in Middle East.
What is it about the technology that's different? And what I mean by that, Hijar, is that from the outside, people would look at the Kurdistan region or the Kurdish, the region where the Kurdish people live, and think that's a very difficult region to operate in. So I wonder what kind of challenges poses the region that you're in, and maybe later on we'll come on to how that's different from perhaps some of the challenges that European broadcasters would face or American broadcasters would face, because it's a very different region to cover.
Anything that you would think it's a no-brainer, that's a very basic thing, is a challenge there. Technical point of view, if you look at it from the technical side. Before anything, what do you need to operate anything? Electricity. Electricity was a challenge. There is no 24/7 electricity there, overall in Iraq and especially in the Kurdistan region. Still, the electricity is a challenge. So what you need to do, most probably not many CTOs in the world of broadcast industry would need to think about like generators and UPS systems, balancing it, synchronization panels and all those. But unfortunately, we had to go through this. So other than the national electricity, we have to always have backup power sources like generators, huge generators, because, you know, like a broadcast center needs a lot of power. And at that time, all the servers and lighting and everything was consuming more power. Thankfully, now, day by day, the amount of power that they need is reducing. But at that time, it was huge. So power was a huge issue. And then with that comes other challenges, because generator, when it regularly works, it needs maintenance. And on top of the maintenance, it needs gas. Clean gasoline. When your gasoline is not that high quality, because at that time, especially, there wasn't much of a quality control over those products. So during winter, we could end up with freezing gasoline. And that freezing gasoline would break down the generators. Breaking down generators would drain the UPS system. And also keep in mind that, let's say, okay, we have a source of electricity, we have another backup, but in between there is an outage. So you need to have huge and powerful UPS systems to be able to keep the channel up. You cannot just go down and come back. So you had to have that to be able to continuously operate the channel. So electricity was a huge challenge. Bringing modern technology into the region was a huge challenge, because transportation wasn't there. Believe it or not, back in 2012, there was no UPS in the region. There was no contractor who worked with FedEx or any major transportation company in the world, which for a media organization in North America or Europe, overnight shipping, UPS pick it up, drop it up, do RMAs, that's a nothing. For us, it's a huge challenge. On top of that, okay, so we had, okay, we were lucky to find the investors. We were lucky to be able to know what we want exactly for our channel. And then on top of that, another challenge came, as I know a lot of my colleagues in the world, no matter where they are, they have this challenge, is to have the experts and the people who they know how to operate this technology, because it's not a one-man show. It's a teamwork. It's a very special professional work that needs a group of people to focus on different areas and make it operate. So finding that people was not easy at all. It's not important how excited me or my IT team is about the technology. It's about the right technology that could empower my journalist team, that they wouldn't need to deal with technical difficulties and they could focus on story creation and storytelling to bring their ideas into reality on that screen. Because at the end of the day, the audience wouldn't know if you are using Avid or any other news gathering system, what they saw was the content on that screen. And that was the outcome. That's what people saw there. So it was important that we as the technology team design and install and design a workflow that feeds exactly the needs of that journalist who were sitting in Rudau newsroom working for different mediums and platforms, that they could empower them and enrich their ideas and ambitions to tell the stories they wanted to tell to people.
You talked there about some of the challenges you would face in the studio environment. What about the challenges you face for your editorial teams who are working on the ground? Because you've talked earlier on about communication can be difficult in certain parts of the world that's there. So what kind of challenges do they face?
The guys that they go, guys, I need to say, ladies and gentlemen, who they went to the field in terms of journalists and also operations team, they faced a lot of challenges. As I said, first thing was not the ability of communication. Like, there was no telco company that could give us a reliable network, wireless network outside. That was the first and basic means of communication there, which wasn't there and slowly developed. Even though we had that at some point, especially during the ISIS fight, we had this issue that the teams would go into regions that there was even no telephone communication. There was no way we could communicate with them. So yes, one mean was the satellite phones, but at some point, trust me, they become too, when you are operating 24/7 with 20 teams in a fight zone of 1,700 kilometers, and then you're communicating with all those teams over there, their safety, their operations, their information, their picture, using satellite phones might not be the best possible idea. So we had to always be very, very flexible in terms of communication. And I remember one day we had our teams in Mosul during the ISIS operations in 2016 or 17. And I remember that when the teams were going outside of the borders of Kurdistan region on the other side, because it was under control of ISIS previously and Iraqi government did not exist there anymore, there was no means of communication whatsoever. So the only way we could send picture back was to develop very mobile, very powerful, basic SNGs to go and send us picture through satellite. Okay, they send us picture, but you know, broadcast means two-way communication. How do we communicate with them? So what we did is basically, for example, one of the things and ideas that we come up with is to use the same contribution satellite that we use, put it in the same transponders on the satellite, take manually create, because we didn't have the luxury of buying equipment or ordering equipment from such and such company that receives next day. So everything was manual. So what we did, we opened up spectrum analyzers who they had decoders inside, run an audio cable that comes out of those spectrum analyzers, and we dedicated an audio channel from our main building that would have a communication channel for the SNG operator and the journalist there, so they could listen to us, they could see what we are saying. And then I remember at some point I had to sit in the ingest department, ingest and media management, and the MCR to be able to communicate directly to satellite. And I remember the producer would give cue to me and I would transfer that back to the journalist and the SNG engineer on the field, and the journalist would know what is the question that's been asked from the presenter so that they could answer it. Obviously, then we made it better and better and better. We integrated it with our intercom system, we integrated it with our studio systems and everything. But what I'm saying is that the technology department was one of the biggest advantages that I received, thankfully, to all my colleagues and the team. Was my team was young and energetic and excited about what they were doing, and they were open to new ideas. We always thought about, okay, let's think differently. What can be done? How can we utilize this equipment in a different way? Yes, we are using it for this purpose, or people are using it for such purpose. How can we use it differently now? How can we use it to fit our purpose now?
There's a lot of talk within the industry of moving capabilities to the cloud. How realistic or otherwise is it for an organization like Rudau to look into those kind of developments?
There is a very important point that we need to always mention. There is nothing wrong with any technology or development or services that gives benefit to anyone in the world technologically. For example, I might be interested in an iOS device, and someone else might be interested in an Android device for their mobile, personal mobile phone, because Android fits more into their needs and iOS might fit more into my needs. And I guess this is in a very bigger scale. That's true for broadcast as well. Yes, cloud and microservices have been a huge discussion in the recent years during like NAB and IBC and when we get together and even our meetings with the other CTOs in the world. However, realistically, when I look at it, does that benefit us? I really need to think about that. There has been a few times that with our teams, even my IT team, we had serious discussions to see, do we really have to go on cloud? Does cloud really bring something else to our table? To be very honest to you, I understand my colleagues from Netherlands, from UK, from US, from all those countries that it might bring some benefit to their table. Till now, we have not seen a real benefit in cloud services for Rudao yet. Yes, we use cloud at certain points here and there. However, in a very high scale, we do not see it. There are few very important reasons for that. One of them being that the hubs and switches that connects the world to the world of cloud of internet are not as oftenly found in the region. Keep in mind the first data centers of Amazon and Huawei are just being built in Saudi Arabia now. And even when we talk about Saudi Arabia, don't think that Saudi Arabia is 20 kilometers away from Erbil. It's not. Saudi Arabia is on the other side of the Gulf. There is water in between. It's not a matter that you could take your personal car from Brussels and you drive up to Amsterdam in few hours and no one would ask you where you're going. There is a lot of challenges in between to be able to connect to that. For me, for example, even though we do have a very strong high quality fiber lines, and even now we have connected some of our offices through private fiber in Kurdistan region. However, still, when I'm connecting to the world, I need to go through a fiber that goes through Turkey, and from Turkey it goes to Germany, and in Germany is that actually this is my main switch. So having this huge dedicated bandwidth is not that cost effective for me. And even it's not that cost effective accessing those media, the risk factor, keep in mind, let me tell you another challenge that other colleagues might not have it. If there is a political dispute, that fiber line between Kurdistan region and Turkey could be cut. Or some explosive would go on those redundant fiber lines that are there and could be cut. Then what? How can I have access to the cloud then? So that's why it's not just because of those challenges, because of a lot of other reasons. We have not seen the benefits of cloud and microservices yet at a very high scale. As I said, we are using it in tiny, tiny scales, but at a very high scale, we have not seen the benefits for us. But it could be a huge door opening for some other organizations in the world.
What about AI? You know, we were recently at the IBC trade show. AI was everywhere. What are your own thoughts on the use of AI within journalism, within the wider media industry? What do you think?
I think AI is a must. AI is here to stay, and AI is here to take over the world. This is for sure. It's obvious. We cannot run away from that. We have to adapt to it. We need to know how to use it. And we need to be very, very, very careful, in my opinion, so that AI is not used in the wrong way. AI, I still believe that it's a huge challenge for real news. I think it's the borderline between news, fact-based news, objective news, and fake news is a very, very thin borderline in between that could be very easily manipulated, especially if you have such powerful technological power that AI and the powerful computing in the world could offer right now, all those cloud services and servers. In terms of news industry and broadcast industry, I think we have huge benefits and disadvantages. Huge benefit and good news is for your company. As a technology company in the field of news, I think Avid has a lot of opportunity to integrate AI into their technology and services that would enrich the technology. It would take the technology to a different level. It will help the journalist a lot in terms of organizing content, in terms of finding content, managing archive, using text-to-speech, as we saw a lot of new technologies, even within Avid, just at IBC, that AI is being integrated. I think these are all benefits, and we're going to see more and more and more. In terms of Rudau ourselves, let me tell you an very exciting news that we have already formed an AI team at Rudau, like a lot of organizations in the world, that we do our own AI developments as well. We will use the tools that are available in the world, because I'm a believer that when something is already there, don't spend time on this, because technology and the modern life and is there for us to advance. We need to make human being, push human being forward. Just to say, that X and Y person have developed that tool, and I'm going to another one of these tools. No, they already take it to that level. You go and develop beyond that level. For us as Rudau, what is important? There is a lot of tools that are available for a lot of people at no cost in different language, like English. There is text-to-speech available in English. There is a lot of AI tools available in English. But those AI tools are not that useful in Kurdish, because the models, the database, it's not there. So we are working on few exciting projects to integrate it with Rudau services that would actually give the Kurdish audience the benefits that an Arabic speaker or English speaker or Dutch speaker has already have it, will bring them up to that speed. When we, again, when we launched in HD, we told people, you deserve. If the people of USA, if the people of Europe are watching news in HD, you deserve to watch news in your own language in HD. Why not? Let's give them HD. Let's give them all those live feeds. And now we are telling them, we'll try to develop AI for you, and we'll give you the tools that the other people in the world are using. You deserve it.
Hey, John, it's been really, really great to chat to you and to get your perspective on things. It's been really, 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 really interesting. To round things up, there's a final question I ask everyone in the podcast, which is, what is it, if anything, that keeps you up at night?
First of all, thank you very much for having me. It's a great pleasure, definitely, to be with you and to be on this podcast. It's an amazing opportunity. Thanks very much for having me. I hope that I didn't run over my time a lot. We had a lot to say. And what keeps me awake at night? There's actually a lot of things, Greg. It's not the usual things that keeps a CTO in the world awake at night. I think it's, unfortunately, personally speaking, I have not been back in my hometown for the last more than 20 years right now. My dad passed away, and I couldn't be with him at his last moments at that time because of the situation in Iran. Other than that, technology is always a risk. So there's always the possibility of something is going wrong. So when there is and you know, the challenges are always happening when an important event is happening. Unfortunately, they never happen on those easy days. So always there is a challenge, and news never, ever give us a heads up in the Middle East, unfortunately. And any news could be devastating. It could be very good. It could be very bad. As you know, like even last week, we covered extensively for the world the incident that happened in Hamdania, where a wedding became a huge massacre, and then more than 140 people lost their lives, where it should be a happy moment of their life, seeing their loved ones getting married and everything. And this is unfortunately still happening in the world. So the world is is not that pink, safe, all happy world never been and never will be, because someone in the world are still suffering from the very, very basic right of themselves. And we are there to cover that for them. And I'm proud that we were there first and very most with those people. And we are still with them to cover their events and to at least be their voice. What happened has happened. Our objective is to make sure that to show how important it is to prevent that from happening again in the future, to make sure that we take people who they were responsible, accountable for that. If anything, editorially, I admire and I believe so much in one statement that very respectful journalist Christian Amanpour have mentioned on her main promo. She says that during all those experiences that she had and everything, she learned that as a journalist, as a media personnel, as a technology person in the media industry, we need to deal with the truth, not balancing or neutrality. The truth is what's important. And we all are part of a system that we need to bring the truth up and show it to people to make the world a better living place for people. And this is an ambition. This is an objective. This is a goal that keeps me alive and keeps me awake at night as well.
Holding people responsible and getting to the truth of the story. Important closing words from Hejar there, and thanks to him for sharing the story of Rudau with us. Now, don't forget to subscribe to get notified when new episodes of the podcast are out on your platform of choice. And please feel free to leave a review and to share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. Check out the show notes for links to another podcast episode with Rebecca Moore, the Director of Technical Operations for CNN International, and an article about some of the potential use cases for AI in media production. Let us know what you think by getting in touch on social media. There are all of the various Avid channels, of course, and I am Craig AW1969 on both X and Instagram. You can always email us. We are makingthemedia@avid.com. Thanks again to Hejar and to our producer Matt Diggs. My name is Craig Wilson. Thanks most of all to you for listening, and join us next time for more in-depth discussion with the people making the media.